Welcome to another episode of Climate Tracker Weekly, where we share stories that matter to young climate journalists around the world. I'm your host, Sena Mikuja, and I'm Climate Tracker's Program Manager in Africa. This week, we're talking to Cici Siago, a Kenyan journalist who's passionate about women empowerment and gender equality. We talk about the impacts of climate change in Kenya and what stories she's planning to write in the future. Take a listen. Hi, Cici. How are you? Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm also very excited to be here today.
Thank you. I just want you to tell us a bit about yourself, because you're a really exciting young person that is doing incredible things when it comes to journalism, to reporting on climate and the environment on the African continent. But I want you to tell our listener about yourself and about the country that you come from.
Okay, my name is Cici Siago. I'm introducing myself again. I am a 25-year-old young journalist in Kenya. I write on various issues, including climate change. I am mostly introverted. It doesn't mean that I don't talk with people, but
I feel you.
I still talk to people. I still do my work as a journalist, and that is very interesting. And also, what else can I say about myself? I think seeing people happy just gives me a lot of satisfaction.
And that's really exciting to see that your work is something that is going to make a lot of people happy in the next couple of minutes when they find out about what you're doing. And even on the continent, in a couple of years, when the effects of the climate crisis becomes more visible in our communities. But before we go into all of that, you know, I want us to start on a light note. What is one exciting thing about Kenya that you feel people should know about? Because I found that the best way to get, you know, the best spots in the country, or to get exciting information about a place, is to hear directly from locals. So what do you think is one exciting thing about Kenya that we don't already know about?
That you don't already know about. I don't know if you know that Kenyans really love taking tea.
Really? Okay, now you're blowing my mind, because I've absolutely never heard of that. And I'm an African. Oh, that's exciting. Please tell me, what type of tea? How did this come about? Do you know how this started and what inspired this culture in Kenyans?
I think it's because tea is grown in Kenya. It's one of the biggest exports that the country makes. And so growing up, children must take tea in the morning, and then at maybe mid-morning, and then at noon. So it's a culture that just grows in any Kenyan when they're growing up. And so when they're adults or when they're old people, they have to take tea. My mother takes tea every day before she goes to bed.
I can imagine. So how about you, Cici? I mean, be honest. I know you gulp at least 7 cups a day. I'm just kidding. But how many times do you take tea? And what is your favorite way to have tea?
Interestingly, I only take tea in the morning most of the time, but not early morning, around 10 a.m., between 10 and 11. Like right now, I haven't taken tea yet, and it's after 9.
And I know you're counting that. You're looking at your clock. It's like, let's move on to that and talk about your journalism career and your progression as a journalist. What was it that inspired you to become a journalist?
Well, it's actually interesting, because when I was growing up, I wanted to be a nurse up to around grade 3. And then I just realized, no, I don't think this is what I really want. And so I changed when I realized that I was actually very good in languages, in schools and arts. And I would talk to my friends and they're like, you should be a journalist. How you write? I think you should be a journalist. And that's how I just decided I wanted to be a journalist.
As a female journalist, what has been your journey like? What has been your experience working in newsrooms or working with people? How do people react to you as a female journalist?
Okay, it, It's actually been interesting because I started practicing journalism when I was very young. Immediately when I was still in college, when I was already in the field out there getting information. So as a female journalist, it's been shocking to so many people. They see me, you know, I'm short, I'm not tall. So when they see me, they're just like, "Are you in high school?"
Oh
And then
my
when they
God.
see my name, sometimes,
Yeah.
yeah, are you still in high school? That's one of the questions that someone asks me. And then the next thing someone asks, when maybe they text me or call me after I've sent an email, I'm like, "Good afternoon, sir." I think it's because of my name.
So let's unpack that, Sisi. Let's unpack that. Is your name a name that is traditionally given to men? Is that what it is? Or is it a unisex name, sort of?
No, Sisi is an English name,
Mm-hmm.
but it's not very common in Kenya. And then I don't know what my mom thought when she gave me that name. And then Siago, and then Siago is a traditional name. It was my great grandmother's, and so it's also so traditional that it's not very common, and people don't know about it. And so when they say it, they can't really figure out whether I'm a girl or I'm a boy.
That's so interesting. And do you think that it also, you know, means that in the media or in journalism, people traditionally, it doesn't mean that you're doing it consciously, it might even be subconscious, but do you think that that means that people assume that these spaces are typically occupied by men? And so their default reaction to you when you reach out to them to serve as sources is, "Oh, it must be a guy. So good afternoon, Sir Sisi." Yeah. Do you think that is the case?
I think that's the case because someone cannot just text you or call you and said, "How are you, sir?" They have to have that, maybe they have the notion that every journalist or any media person is a man.
I want to ask you, and I think it's similar to the question you've just answered. What are some of the challenges that you've encountered practicing journalism in Kenya? In Nigeria, where I live, for example, I think one of the major challenges that journalists have to contend with is the Nigerian state itself, and safety and security. But I'm curious to know what the situation is in Kenya and what your personal experience has been.
I think so far so good. The only challenge that I have had is still getting, and this is a challenge, I don't know how we'll address it, getting more female sources and experts talking to me when I need comments.
I think that's a very serious area of concern that you have. Why, in your opinion, do you think there are not a lot of women sources that people in journalism can approach to give their opinion on matters when they're writing stories?
One of the reasons is because there's still no gender equality in most sectors. So you'll find my expert is either a CEO, my expert is a director, and this always lands in a guy's name. You know, it's a man that is taking that position. Either it's a politician. And then on the other side, the few, some women that are still in these high places don't really want to speak. You know, you can ask for their opinion, but they're like, "Ah, no, let me think about it. No, can you book an
I know,
appointment?
right?
No." Yeah. "I'm not sure if I should tell you this. Oh, you're from the media." That's also another challenge, being looked as you're a journalist, but some people see you as, you know, as an enemy. Like they see you as a critic who wants to take you know, to just observe mistakes and take them from them.
And there's something about Africa, right, that I think that journalists need to amplify and address if we're going to have more women in journalism. And I think there's a culture of silence in Africa in general. And this culture of silence is specifically targeted at women. And I think it starts at childhood, and women are taught to shrink themselves. You know, don't talk too much. You know, you're talking too much for a girl. And I think that, you know, sometimes this can translate to adulthood. and even impact the way that women present themselves. Because I'm sure if you approach a man to interview him, he's going to jump at the opportunity. I don't think a man will second guess himself when present. And it's because I also feel it's because of the way society has socialized women to view themselves as people who need to be hidden, not seen. And as for men to be vocal and take control and be leaders.
Mm-hmm, very true. Because I can give an experience. There's a time I was interviewing a certain lady, and she told me, "Don't mention me too much on your story."
Wow.
And I asked her why. She was an activist, and she told me people usually tell her she's too talkative, she's too loud, she expresses herself so much.
Wow.
And she's a woman; she's not supposed to do that.
Oh wow.
That's what they told her. Yeah.
That is shocking to hear. And these are real life experiences, right? These are things you see while reporting in the and I think it's sad, and I think it's an area that really needs change, because in my entire career I've never interviewed a man who didn't want to be mentioned so much. But you know, it's interesting. Let's move on from that. Reporting on climate and the environment, especially in the African continent, is an emerging genre. It is something that editors in newsrooms consider to be a topic or one of those things, but they don't quite see it as an emergency. They don't quite see it as something to prioritize, you know, the way that politics will be prioritized, for example, or the way that business stories or sports even will be prioritized. So it's interesting that, you know, you are telling the stories, and I want to know how you started telling the stories. What was your motivation for telling stories about climate or for reporting on the climate and the environment?
My motivation mostly was, I think when I was still in college, I would read a lot. I would see posts about climate change, and I knew that when I wanted to practice journalism later on, I'd like to write on this. Because also I would read the newspapers in Kenya, and they were not giving, they're not giving enough airtime or enough space for stories on climate change. And also I just did my research and saw that very few journalists are actually reporting on climate change. So that's what made me want to report about climate change, because I knew that the future needed it. And then I knew that this is not something that is given priority currently in the journalism sphere in Kenya. And yeah, that's why I chose to do it.
That's a really interesting reason, specifically because Kenya is strategic in conversations about climate, the environment. Kenya is very biodiverse in terms of flora and fauna, in terms of even its people. It's very diverse, and this natural endowment is threatened by degradation and other factors. What stories in this past year, or since you started reporting about climate and the environment, have you reported that has reflected the situation in Kenya? Can you tell us an example of a story you've done?
I've done a story on the rising lake of the rising waters of Lake Naivasha. That is a Rift Valley lake. Last year, the lake was really rising, 2019 and 2020, and it was covering people's houses. Some hotels that were by the lake were submerged. And that is the story that one of the stories that I cover, just getting there, getting to talk to the people, asking them how was the situation maybe 10 years ago and what is the situation now? And is it something that you've seen before? And they were saying that, no, this is the first time. And then I spoke to experts, and they told me about deforestation, and they told me about now how more water and the silt is flowing into the lake to cause it to rise. You know, there's all that. I investigated all that. And yeah, that was one of the stories I did.
And does that worry you? Because one of the mainstays in Kenya is tourism, right? So if hotels and businesses are getting flooded because of man-made causes or things that we're doing as a people to impact the environment negatively, does that worry you as a journalist?
It does worry me, because Also, the other thing is that locals don't see this as climate change. They just see this as sometimes witchcraft. Some say, the gods are angry with us. That's also another thing. So people don't really understand that there is a factor that is called climate change that has to be addressed and that is coming with some worse impact in maybe in the coming years and in some of the things that they're already experiencing in their villages.
And it's really interesting that you see that because I was reading a story a while ago, and a part of the story mentioned environmental generational amnesia and the fact that the way that people view the environment as it is today is not the way that people 2 generations back view the environment. People in our generation, for example, think that some of the things that is happening or that are happening around the world and in our environment is normal. But it's not. We've inherited a completely different world, and I quite agree with I don't quite agree, but I think I see how people can view it in that. It's because they don't know a different world than they've inherited, right? Which is why I think that the conversation on climate change is really important, that people do not inherit a substandard version of the world, or they don't inherit a hotter planet, a wetter planet, a planet that drowns their businesses, or a planet that cuts down their forests, and they think it's normal because it's not. And that is why the work that you're doing is so important. What story are you currently working on now, Sissy?
The story I'm working on a disappearing lake, and that is in also the coast part of Kenya. So there's this lake, its name is Lake Kenyatta. It keeps on appearing and disappearing.
Their communities, I know it's sad, it's not funny, but I don't know why their communities that rely on Lake Kenyatta for survival, and how do you think that this will impact those communities if any exist in that lake at all?
There are communities that rely on Lake Kenyatta because, first of all, it's the only freshwater lake in the area. And so any water that is gotten in the area is from it's salty water. And so they rely on it for water, for washing, for cleaning, for their animals, for drinking, for any other industrial activities, though it's not very vibrant there. But yeah, for any other minor industrial activities, yeah.
Now let's talk about the impact that that will have on the lives of the people who live at the banks of Lake Kenyatta, because that means that they no longer have access to safe water, because when people run out of water or a traditional water source, it means that the way that they get water in the future might be unsafe. It means that jobs that, like you've rightly said, that depend and industries that depend on that water will be affected, and it will disrupt the economy of that community. What do you think will be the biggest challenge for the people in living on the banks of Lake Kenyatta?
Sadly, the biggest would be loss of lives because water is very important. And unless people living on the shores of Lake Kenyatta move to another area, that means they might not be able to survive because the water is actually everything for communities in Kenya, not just Lake Kenyatta, for Lake Naivasha, for Lake Victoria. People depend on the lake for fishing. People depend on lake for tourism. People depend on the lake for water. And yeah, the whole economy will be disrupted, and people will just have to move to another area because, yeah, because that's it.
All right, let's talk about a bit about the decision making that happens in newsrooms when it comes to deciding the type of stories to amplify and give attention to. In a lot of newsrooms, editors make the decision to amplify stories that are sensational, stories that are bound to get immediate reaction and therefore drive up their numbers. And at the end of the day, for most newsrooms, it's about the bottom line. How would you suggest that African editors approach the conversation of telling climate and environmental stories in a way that it is both interesting, sensational, and exciting to people, and that people pay attention to? It's also not hurting their bottom line at the end of the day.
I think editors should approach stories of climate change with the same zeal that they approach any other stories, whether on politics or on which other ones, this other human interest stories. You see, for example, if fire breaks out in a house right now and maybe one person die, and I work on that story, and then a lake maybe rises and submerges one house in maybe in the western part of Kenya, the story that will be given more priority is this one, that a fire has caught a house. So the best way is for this editors to have the zeal, the same zeal that they have on this other, maybe like it's more of bad news sells more. News of death are given priority. If I wrote a story on climate change and it maybe takes half a page, and the same night another story of a fire comes out, my story will be pulled out of the paper to replace it with there, just because it's talking about, it's a tragedy, yes, but it's talking about death.
And I think these are some of the important conversations that, you know, that need to happen in newsrooms, and that journalists need to start putting forward to their editors. You know, it's, you know, and I feel that Africa is going to have the highest, I mean, we can already see it, right? Africa is going to have the highest impact when the climate crisis snowballs. It's already visible, but I believe that it's going to become much more worse, especially because we do not have the structures, we do not have the infrastructure to deal with it. Some countries have, some countries are preparing, some countries are doing really well. Countries like Uganda, for example, are doing really well when it comes to things like this. But are you worried, right, that tourists in Kenya are going to have or are leaving a negative impact on tourism?
Honestly, I think in the recent years, maybe from 2 years ago, Kenya has been really trying its best to up its game on conservation. So it's banned plastic littering in national parks and beaches, and that is actually working for now. And then also for the national parks, you're not allowed to, tourists are not allowed to get out of the vans, because they're usually accompanied by tour guides who are the drivers of the vehicles. So they're not allowed to get out of the vans, and this makes them have less contacts with the animals. And also, I think there are more rangers. The other time I was working on a story on how the female rangers had graduated from training to work in a national park. So that's what I think. Currently, Kenya's going on the conservation way, and I feel confident more on the tourists that are coming into the country and the regulations that have been put to just ensure that the wildlife is safe and the biodiversity is also okay.
It's really exciting to see, because if we do not protect our natural environment, that can be catastrophic for us as well, especially in terms of economic terms. And so I think it's exciting to see that the Kenyan government is being proactive and is taking clear steps to ensure that is remedied. Let me ask you about what your major concerns are for Kenya when it comes to being on the front lines of reporting the climate crisis. What are your concerns for Kenya as a country now?
Everyone is taking this as normal. When there are delayed rains, people are just like, ah, that's normal, they're going to come later. For farmers, they say that we're supposed to plant in February, but probably the rains are going to come in March, so we're going to plant in March. And that is very normal. What else? For the lakes that are rising, for the sea that is rising, people are just like, no, now I have to move. You know, I think the gods are unhappy, and that's why our sea is rising and it's almost getting into the houses. So my concern is for people to just be informed, for maybe the government. I don't know if it's the government or also my role as a journalist, to do more human stories that show the effects of climate change. When someone reads it, they understand that actually this is not something that is normal. This is something that is climate change, and we have to put up mitigations to ensure that it doesn't have so much effect on us in the coming years.
I think you've raised a very interesting point, and something that stood out to me with what you've just said is doing more human stories, stories that humanize the climate crisis. Do you feel that this is what is missing in newsrooms in Kenya or on the African continent as a whole, or in the general coverage of the climate crisis, the human aspect of it? Because when you see climate stories, sometimes it's all about numbers and emissions, and to the regular person on the outside, you know, none of that makes sense, right? Unless you have a specific interests in following those conversations. And so I think it's you've provided a very interesting solution that I think that is very useful for journalists to consider when they want to report on climate stories. It's great to do stories with numbers. It's great to do stories talking about the negotiations around climate change, the action that people are demanding and all of that. What extreme weather events has Kenya had to deal with in the past year? What coverage would you like to see about it?
I think there's been also a lot of flooding here in Kenya. Not recently, let's say late last year and early this year, there was a lot of flooding, even in Nairobi, the capital city, you know, so somewhere where there's regular rain. But this time it was flooding in the areas where there was a lot of rain. There was even more rain expected, and so the meteorological department was recording more millimeters, like higher millimeters than normal. For the coast of Kenya, it actually became colder at some point. It was like cooler than normal, because when I say that the temperature usually ranges from 27 to, let's say, 30 to 31 degrees. This time it's from 23, 24, 25 to 30. And so people are very worried, you know, I think the coast of Kenya it's almost like Nigeria, where you'll just sleep, you won't have to cover yourself with a sheet or a duvet or a blanket. And so this time it's too cold that you have to cover yourself. And also, in the dry part of Kenya, it's now even drier. Currently, there's drought being experienced, and animals are dying. And then there are cases of human and wildlife conflict that have increased. More cases of elephants hurting people. The other day, there was a hyena that killed two children from the same house. And where the wildlife service is now saying that that is because of the drought that is being experienced in the national parks, forcing the animals to come into the homes of the people.
Can we talk a bit about the droughts that is happening in Kenya? Because I've seen it mentioned before, but I haven't really paid attention to it. But I think it's a great thing that you raised. What is the situation with the droughts? In what areas, you know, is it happening? And what has been you've mentioned some of the impact of this drought, but what has been other impact that you have observed so far?
Okay, there's drought that is actually happening in mostly parts of eastern Kenya and a little bit northeastern, sorry, and a little bit of coast region where it hasn't rained. When you talk to the people, they tell you that it has not rained since last year. They've never seen any heavy rain since last year. And maybe early this year, there was only showers, you know, rain that could barely support their farming, rain that could barely support their water harvesting for them to store enough water. And the effects on this is that people have been dying. We have had reports of a woman, and there's also another man that died because of hunger. Animals, there's so many hundreds of animals are dying every day. There are photos of dry bones, and just it's so scary because there's no water, and so there's no food. And so people don't have anything to eat, making the animals just die. And I think there's one community that said they're now forced to sell their cows at a very cheap price, maybe a quarter of what they would have sold it, because they need that money. And also another interesting impact is that some communities have gone to deforestation now, cutting down the trees to sell the charcoal to now get the money to buy water. So Yeah, that is also another point. Let me try to remember something else about the impact. The other impact is the human wildlife conflict that has increased because animals are now getting out of the national parks to come to where the people are, hoping to get water, and they end up attacking them and causing death.
It's really interesting how devastating these things are, and sometimes there's this feeling of helplessness, right? But it's not all helpless, which is why the work you're doing, I probably said this a billion times, but I think the work you're doing is very important to be able to bring these issues to light. And it's very timely as well, and I hope that it gains more acceptance as time goes by. But before you go, I want to ask what your future plans and projects are.
My future plans and project is to identify more climate stories that I can work in my country and then humanize them when I'm working on them, to just increase the visibility of such stories to every reader in the country, because we understand that the media or being a journalist is a very powerful position in terms of information. When you write something, millions of people are reading it. So I want to work on more stories on climate in different regions in the country to just show people that this actually it's real. It's possible for us to have impacts on climate change, and then it's also important for us to put up mitigations that can help reduce these impacts and these effects in the near future.
Those are great plans, and I wish you all the best in those plans. Do you have any words of advice for young journalists on in Kenya and even on the African continent, who want to tell stories about the environment and climate? What have been some of your high points, your low points, and what can journalists, especially women journalists, what can they learn from you and from what you're doing?
First of all, I just say for any young journalist to be patient, because being a journalist in Kenya is quite a challenge. Especially there are hundreds of graduates who have studied journalism, but a very few percentage of them get to be employed and just get to get their work published by a media house. And so that is one of the challenges. So I'd ask them to be patient, to also be creative and come up with their own news sites, because right now we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have blogs that one can create, so they can come up with such platforms to just share the stories that they really want to write about, or to make videos about, or to make podcasts about. Also, my advice would be to be hardworking, because for being a female journalist in Kenya, or being a young journalist in Kenya, for you to rise ranks, you really have to show that you can do good and you can be your best. So I'd advise them to work hard and ensure that they do the best in whatever they do to be recognized, or for their work to just be recognized by people out there. And also, yeah, I'd also advise it to be easy on themselves. It's never that serious. It takes time to be a good journalist. I'm not a good journalist. Every day is a learning day for me. But yeah, it takes time to get there, and yeah, be easy on yourself.
See, I can tell you that you're doing amazing things. You're inspiring a lot of young journalists on the African
Thank you.
continent who want to tell stories like this. And you're taking up space. And I love to see when women take up space. I really love this because this has not been the convention. And so the fact that women are going into these conversations that are traditionally not considered our preserve or have been, or we've been excluded from in the past is very important, and representation matters, right? So when a lady or when a woman says CC Siago doing it, then she knows that it's possible. So I want to thank you for what you're doing and say that it's really important. And so, you know what, CC? Thank you. Thank you for putting a girl on. Thank you for this. Thank you for this
Welcome.
recommendation. I'll definitely be checking it out, and hopefully the climate tracker team as well. Thank you so much, Sisi Siago, for coming on the podcast today to have this conversation with us. We hope to have you sometime soon in the future. You're part of the climate tracker family now, and we're excited to see the work that you are doing, and we look forward to collaborating with you in the future to continue to tell these really important stories.
Thank you so much. Also, thank you for having me. I look forward to working on more stories and collaborating with you guys at Climate Tracker now that I'm a family member right now, and also more trainings that will make me create more stories of impact in my country and in the globe.
And that's it for the show. I am Senna Mekuja, and this is Climate Tracker Weekly. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter and visit our website. Join us again next time for another episode of Climate Tracker Weekly.